occupational therapist and a certified aging in place specialist. And this is the Home Designs for Life podcast, your resource for aging in place and universal design. For more resources on aging in place, please visit my website, homedesignsforlife.com. There you will find my blog and more valuable information on how you can age in place and create a home for life. Hello, everyone, and thank you for being with me today. My guest is Sally Duplantier, and she is the founder of My Zing Life. She is also the founder and the host of Wellness Wednesdays. Sally, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, Janet, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I would like you to tell us a little bit about your professional background and your education.
All right. So I am a gerontologist and a health span educator. And that's kind of a mouthful. So a gerontologist is someone who studies the science of aging. And my interest in health span is this idea of helping older adults live their best life longer. So health span is the number of years that we're free of disease and chronic disease and disability. And unfortunately, Janet, in this country, we are living longer than ever, but we're not living better. People over 60, at least 90% have one chronic disease and 80% have two. So my mission is to help people be physically strong, mentally sharp for as long as possible. And I'm happy to share a little bit about my education background, if that's helpful.
Yes, tell us about your education background.
So it's kind of interesting because I returned to college in my mid-60s. How about that? Mm-hmm. I'm an entrepreneur by heart, started my first company in my 20s, sold it, retired, worked for 10 more years in a different field, and retired a second time. And then in my mid-60s, I started my Zing Life, really because I was interested in my own aging and how to age better and how to help others. But I didn't have any background for this. You know, it's like I was in a whole different field. So first I went to Stanford and got a certificate in nutrition science. And that was an amazing experience. And then I went on to the University of Southern California. I got a master's of science degree in gerontology. Now I'm at Indiana University and I'm doing postgrad research. So it's been quite a journey. You know, I believe that we are never too old to learn, grow, or contribute. And I love my work and I love the learning that I'm doing as a result.
Well, you are the perfect example of a baby boomer because that is a quintessential aspect of baby boomers is that they may retire from their first career, but they're engaging in second and third careers, continue to have an income, continue to contribute. And I just feel that that is so important because what gives you the energy to keep going is having purpose in life.
Yeah, that is so true. There's a Japanese phrase for that. It's called ikigai, and it's reason for being. And I actually talk a lot about it in my work with older adults. You know, sometimes we feel like, oh my gosh, I have to go out and find my purpose. And that's daunting because you might not feel that you have one. But we can all like make a difference, even if it's just in one person's life. There are things that we can do. But that reason for being, you know, it might be going out into your garden because you love gardening, but then it could be helping someone else garden. You know, I love this idea, and it's evidence-based, the importance of social connection in keeping us healthy. And so if we can think about making a difference in someone's life, even if it's the kid down the street, you know, maybe you help tutor them in math or, you know, show them how to plant flowers. I think it can have a profound impact on our overall happiness.
Mm, yes, I agree with you. Sally, your program emphasizes the integration of nutrition, movement, sleep, and stress management. Can you explain how these four factors collectively contribute to healthy aging?
Sure, absolutely. I call those the four pillars of health. And in a moment, I'm going to introduce a fifth one. But the research shows that more people in the U.S. are dying from chronic disease than infectious disease. So that's a shift since the 1900s. And in fact, about 80% of chronic disease could be reversed or eliminated by changing those four pillars, along with smoking and drug use, quite honestly. Those four pillars that we talked about, nutrition, sleep, movement, stress, they account for about 90% of hospitalization costs. So if we can help people eat better, sleep better, move more, and reduce stress, it actually has an impact on our biology at the cellular level. It reduces biological markers of aging like oxidative stress, chronic inflammation. And we can't stop aging completely, but we can slow it down, which means that people are going to have a biological age that's different than their chronological age.
And what you said about movement and exercise, that is actually one of the key reasons why older people fall, and it's generalized weakness. So not only is it going to help you age more slowly by exercising, but you are also going to decrease your risk for falls, which falls is the number one reason why older adults end up in the hospital or it results in death.
Yeah.
So very important.
It's so important. I just did I'm back to doing live presentations post-pandemic. I just did one on balance and falls. And, you know, one of the things about movement is that as older adults, we know we should move more. We get that. And we may favor cardiovascular exercise, which is great. You know, the American Heart Association gives all adults a guideline of 150 minutes of cardiovascular exercise a week. So that's 5 days, 30 minutes a day. Walking is good, but it's not enough because the AHA also says we need to do strength training at least twice a week and balance training 3 times a week. And, you know, like when I teach balance exercise, you can do it as part of your everyday functional movement. Even picture this, Janet, getting in and out of a chair. So sitting comfortably in a chair with your feet on the ground and pushing up. It's like a half a squat. And then slowly lowering yourself. And use your arms if you need to initially, but practice it a couple times. Do it throughout the day. And then strength training is so important because diseases that affect older adults include osteoporosis, sarcopenia, and just this kind of general loss of strength is what also contributes to lack of balance and falls. They go together.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned the strength training because people don't realize that when you lift weights or you use your own body weight as resistance, not only are you strengthening your muscles, but that force is directly transferred to your bones.
Yes.
And you are also strengthening your bones, which is going to prevent a serious injury like a bone fracture or will help you recover from a fall.
Yeah.
So very, very important to not only do cardiovascular exercise, but also you want to do weight training. And then, like you said, the balance and stretching exercises, because part of the reason why an older person cannot, let's say, put on their shoes or tie their shoelaces is because they lost their flexibility. Mm-hmm. But flexibility isn't gone forever. If you actually start stretching and doing these exercises, it comes back.
Yeah, it does. And I'm going to offer kind of some practical advice. I spoke recently at a medical conference. It was the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And these are physicians that are being certified to use evidence-based lifestyle interventions to help their patients. And so one of the things that came up is people who are older adults who may have, you know, pretty severe osteoarthritis, they don't feel like moving. And that's a challenge because if you don't feel like moving, you don't move. And you know what? Then it gets worse. Then the arthritis gets worse, the balance, the osteoporosis. So, you know, what I would advise older adults, if they're in that position, go to your physician and get a referral for physical therapy. I have so much faith in physical therapy. I've had 3 shoulder surgeries and I've had PT for all of them. Like, my shoulders are great now. And physical therapists can help older adults do things safely. You don't have to see someone after an injury or after a fall. You could see someone because you have arthritis and you need to start moving better or differently.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. Let's talk a little bit about nutrition. How does proper nutrition specifically impact the health and well-being of older adults? And what are some key dietary changes you recommend?
Yeah. So nutrition is so important, and it's never too late to start eating better. So I have studied nutrition quite a bit because of my background at Stanford. And then in 2021, I co-authored a paper on the link between diet and cognitive decline with one of my professors at Stanford, and that was published in Nutrients. So I have a lot of knowledge about nutrition and brain health, but the really good news is that if you follow a dietary pattern that's good for your brain, it's good for your heart. It reduces the risk of diabetes. It reduces the risk of kidney disease. It reduces the risk of certain kinds of cancer. So I'm going to just share some of those kind of overall principles, some, you know, like easy tips. I mean, the first one is let's eat more whole foods. We eat so much stuff that's in a package or a bag, and we've gotten away from reaching for an apple or an orange or something that isn't processed. Now, I don't mean eliminate all processed foods. It's virtually impossible. But I'll give you an example. When I see older adults reaching for a lean cuisine, can I say that name on the show? Like a lean cuisine, like a frozen meal. Like, oh, I buy a whole bunch of meals at XYZ grocery store. These are processed foods. Mm-hmm. And you'd be better off preparing some foods and freezing them than to eat a lot of frozen food. So that's one.
Full of sodium, too.
It's full of sodium. And it's usually full of added sugar. I mean, part of the way the food menu is they add sodium and sugar. So that's one, more whole foods. Two is more plants. More plants. You know, we think, I'm not saying you have to be a vegan or a vegetarian, but there really is an emphasis in the dietary world on a plant-forward diet. And there's a misconception that you need to eat animal products to get enough protein. Plants have a lot of protein. Your soys, you know, soybeans, edamame has a lot of protein, beans, legumes, but even whole grains. You know, like a half a cup of rice has 5 grams of protein. Broccoli has protein. Peas have protein. So eating more plants, and what these are important because they contain these neuroprotective substances called polyphenols. And those are good not only for brain health, but heart health. They reduce oxidative stress. They reduce chronic inflammation. So more plants. I would say a couple more tips is switch the fats. So, you know, we're like, oh my God, I can't eat fat. Fat's bad for me. Well, saturated fat, the saturated fat in red meat or animal products, butter. And I hate to say it, cheese, because I love cheese, but I've had to reduce my cheese consumption. But it doesn't mean that all fat is bad. We need it for healthy skin, healthy hair. So get your fat from avocados, from extra virgin olive oil, from nuts, from seeds. So switching out the fats. I think those are 3 key. And then I think in the American diet, we don't eat enough fish. So fish, especially fatty fish like salmon or tuna, even a can of tuna, is high in omega-3 fatty acids. which are important for brain health and cardiovascular health, and get one serving. You know, like if I haven't gotten enough fish during the week, I'll make myself, you know, like a tuna sandwich. It's not that much. But those are kind of four simple things we could do to improve our diet with big health benefits.
Yes, thank you. What about sleep? As an occupational therapist, my patients would often tell me that they wouldn't fall asleep until 2 a.m. And it seemed like a lot of them didn't get more than 5 or 6 hours of sleep. Does the older adult need fewer hours of sleep to function just as well as a younger person?
So, Janet, I love this topic. I have a whole presentation on sleep and how sleep changes as we age. The answer is that the National Sleep Foundation guidelines for older adults is between 7 and 8 hours a night. For adults under 64, it's 7 to 9 hours. So the recommendation is the same. Now, there is some research going on now. There's a lot of research trying to find kind of genetic anomalies that would create a short sleeper. Right now, the data that we have is that there's one gene that's been identified. It's called the DEC2 gene. It's in about 1% of the population. You're more likely to be struck by lightning than to have this genetic anomaly. And yeah, so people who have the DEC2 gene may function fine on 6 hours sleep a night. But for the most part, we need the 7 to 8 hours. The challenge is that there are changes in sleep architecture as we age. And it means that as we get older, it takes longer to fall asleep. We have more nocturnal wakings, and the kind of the restorative shortwave sleep, it's just not as prevalent. So there are some normal age-related disorders associated with sleep.
I know that a common issue is incontinence for older adults, and they report that they wake up 2, 3, 4 times a night to have to urinate. How Yes. can that issue be remedied? Because I know that that is definitely going to contribute to poor sleep, and it is also going to contribute to an increase for your risk for falls, and then also confusion, because if you're not sleeping well, your memory is going to be affected, your mood is going to be affected. How do we work that issue?
It's a big problem. So one of my tips that I provide for better sleep in older adults, I call it rethink that drink. So it's kind of like a trooper. So, I mean, part of it is like if you have trouble sleeping, stop drinking the wine with dinner. I mean, wine, even though it seems like it makes you sleepy initially, it wakes you up at night.
Yes.
But rethink that drink also means 2 hours before bedtime, you're not drinking water. You know, if you need a certain medication you take right before bed, then have a couple of sips. So the idea is that you're not drinking water right up until the time you go to bed because you're going to have to urinate. Now, there is an exercise people can do, and I can't demonstrate this on a podcast, but people can picture it. So another thing that you could do is 2 hours before bedtime, you stop drinking water, you lay on your back and you kind of prop your legs up. Could be on a bench, it could be on a couple of pillows. And then you just start kind of exercising your legs. You just kind of move them up and down and roll your ankles around. Why would you do that? What that will do is it'll take the fluid that has accumulated in the lower extremities, and you'll need to urinate. So you're going to be urinating before you need to go to bed. So isn't that interesting? I learned that from a pelvic floor physical therapist. How about that?
You know, that's great, because my specialty when I worked as an occupational therapist was lymphedema therapy.
Yeah.
So I'm very familiar with the way that the lymphatic system works. And of course, when you get that lymph fluid to travel from the legs and the feet then people immediately have to urinate. You know, when I would do compression therapy, they would get back up. They would get up from the bed and have to go urinate because we were moving that fluid. So that is just a great suggestion. And you know, something else that I think is also an issue contributing to incontinence at night or frequent trips to the bathroom is that a lot of times we're not drinking enough water during the day.
Yes.
And then at the end of the day, you get the realization that I'm thirsty, and you start drinking a lot of water, and then now you've done it at the worst time of the day possible.
Yeah, Janet, it's so true. It's absolutely.
So let's talk about stress management. Stress can have a significant impact on health. What stress management techniques do you find most effective for older adults?
So this is another great question. And part of my advice, it's a little bit like exercise, because it's really what do people gravitate to and what will they do? So I'm going to answer it in a couple of ways. I mean, we know about mind-body exercise like yoga and Tai Chi. So that's wonderful if people want to practice that. Not everyone does. And so part of what I teach is just deep breathing. You can do so much with your breath. I think probably every webinar, every live presentation I do, we take a mindful minute where we just practice the slow closing our eyes and doing a slow inhale and exhale. You know, and we focus on just the breath. And if there are noises or sounds or things that start to interfere, we just go back to the breath. And what I like about breath work is that it's portable. You can be in your car, you can be in traffic, you can be in the grocery store behind five people. You have one item, they have 20, you know, like all the things that can kind of get to us. And you can do your breath work. The other thing that I've noticed, especially now with everything that's going on in the news, is there's this underlying kind of high anxiety. And so this isn't about necessarily stress about, you know, something like, you know, like I'm stuck in traffic. This is worrying about the world and world conditions. And here my advice is, you know, limit your consumption. Do not be looking at social media or the news or a newspaper if you still read a newspaper. Don't be doing it all the time. Don't like limit that. We limit that in kids and we don't limit in ourselves. And I just think it's a challenge for people who are over consuming bad news.
Mm-hmm. I personally stopped watching the news about, I think, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I watch it only sometimes, maybe once a week, where I used to be an avid consumer. And I just stopped watching it because I realized I was happier not watching it. And it gave me more time to focus on the things that I really needed to do, like work and my business. And so it helped me be more productive because I was using that time to do things that actually had a positive impact on my life.
Yeah. I think we can overconsume bad news.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you. Habit formation. Your program focuses on building healthier habits. What strategies do you suggest for older adults to successfully adopt and maintain new health habits?
Yeah. So I'll answer that in two ways. So one is I provide education, evidence-based education about healthy habits through my Wellness Wednesday programs. So that's like I have thought leaders on topics related to, nutrition, movement, sleep, stress, aging reimagined, and that's education. But what I have found, Janet, is that oftentimes we know what to do, but we don't do it. You know, I call it the knowing-doing gap. Like, who doesn't know to eat more vegetables? We all know that. But are we doing it? Who doesn't know that you need to move more, the 150 minutes of exercise. But it can be very challenging to actually execute. So in addition to providing this education through my Wellness Wednesday programs, I also have something called the Healthy Habits Network. And this is where small communities of people come together. And I say small, like my pods, my communities are about 3 or 4 people. And we set intentions about small incremental change we want to make, and then we hold one another accountable. So I'll give you some funny examples from some of my healthy habit clients. We had one person who had so much trouble getting out of like the lounge chair at night, getting up away from the TV and walking up a flight of stairs to get into bed. So she would just sleep in the lounge chair and she'd be uncomfortable, her neck would hurt. Then when she finally started being able to do it, the only way she could motivate herself to get up those stairs was eating chocolate. And she said, I don't think I need like a half a chocolate bar to get up a flight of stairs. But it was very, very hard for her to do on her own. I mean, she wasn't. So it's the power of community. And there's actually a theory tied to this. It's called social control theory. But it's this idea that if we are accountable to another person, we are more likely to change a behavior. Charles Duhigg wrote about this in The Power of Habit. James Clear and Atomic Habits. It's this idea of having something small, measurable, incremental, something that you set. So, somebody might be working on sleep. Somebody in our group, our Healthy Habits Network, might be working on snacking. Somebody might be working on eating more whole foods. I mean, it's something that you want to work on where you make a commitment and then we check in. And I mean, what's funny is that we also, through this, we acknowledge being human. Because I would love to say, Janet, oh, yes, and somebody sets an intention, and then they come back next week, and it's like, oh, my God, I did so great. No, there are builders and busters. There's life. There's social things that get in the way. But it's a safe place to acknowledge. I love to help people think about, like, builders and busters. What's getting in your way? What's getting in your way of reducing your snacks? Maybe it's all the Doritos that you bought.
Yes.
So James Clear, is saying not mine, but he says environment trumps willpower. If you don't want to eat the Doritos, don't buy the Doritos.
That's exactly. Yeah. There are, I love Cheetos. And cheese doodles, at least I eat the healthy ones, the ones with the white cheese. But I don't buy them for that reason, because once I start eating them, then I can't stop.
No. I agree. So the idea of habits is like, if you think about backing up out of your driveway, you either look at your rear view mirror camera, like you might have a camera, or you might turn your head, but it's something that's automatic. And what I'm trying to do through the Healthy Habits Network is help people with these, develop these health behaviors that become more second nature. So the TV show ends at 10 o'clock and you just go upstairs to bed and you don't eat chocolate. Or, you make a better decision about, portion control. You've come to learn that you really don't need this much. You need this much. And for the most part, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And it's just making an effort and then doing it over long periods of time. Yeah. And that's how you develop a habit.
Yeah, it's making better choices most of the time and having fun doing it. I mean, we laugh a lot in Healthy Habits Network. We have many outtakes of things that, where we kind of blew it. But the other thing I try to help people understand is, like, stop thinking I was good or bad. A lot of times, people say, oh, my God, I was so bad this week. Not good or bad. You were on track or you were off track. It's not a judgment. And then what would it take? What needs to be true for you to be on track again?
Mm, yeah, that's a great way of framing it. Tell me more about Wellness Wednesdays.
So I started Wellness Wednesdays during the pandemic. I'll back up and say that I started my Zing life in 2019, pre-pandemic. And I was getting the word out about my business by doing live presentations at senior living facilities. And then we have a global pandemic and nobody is going anywhere. And I thought, well, what could I do to help keep older adults healthy and connected? So I came up with this idea. I knew how to use Zoom from my corporate, days. And I thought, I'm going to host a show and I'm going to get guest speakers to come in and we're going to talk about topics related to healthy aging. Well, it was an idea before its time. My first Wellness Wednesday had 6 people. My second one had 9. And since then, Janet, in the last 3.5 years, we've recorded more than 100 programs. We've had over 14,000 registered participants from 57 countries.
And that's amazing.
It's amazing. And it's a community service I provide. So it's free of charge. Anybody can join. They're all recorded, so people can listen to it if they missed it. If people want to go back to the prior 100 recordings, we have an entire library of expert presentations. People can subscribe. But my guests include thought leaders, researchers, healthcare professionals, authors, and our focus is evidence-based content. So I really stress that, there's so much the blog du jour, eat this food before bedtime and you'll never be fat. I don't subscribe to that. I love research. I love science. And I want to make sure that my guest presenters are sharing information that's grounded in science, but something that we can easily understand and we can take action on. So I'll give you one. I just had Dr. Ali Saad, who's a neurologist and MD, and we did stroke. Know the warning, reduce the risks. Did you know that stroke in the U.S. is the number 2 cause of death and 90% of strokes are preventable?
Mm-hmm.
And so Dr. Saad talked about this, how to know if you're having a stroke, how to know if someone else is having a stroke, but then also looking at those lifestyle factors that would reduce your risk. So really important, important information.
Well, great. I would love to listen to one. I did see a few summaries of your previous Wellness Wednesdays, and they all sound so interesting. And you have so many diverse topics.
Yeah, we do. We do things on, lifestyle. We do things on mental well-being. We also do things on pain and prevention. And then we have one called Aging Reimagined. Because so much of healthy aging, this is another kind of aspect or pillar, has to do with our own ideas about our age, our own kind of self-beliefs. If we believe, oh my gosh, I'm getting old, or if we believe I can't because, it actually affects us at a cellular level. And this was research that was done by Becca Levy out of Yale. She has decades of research. She just published a book called Breaking the Age Code. And her research shows that our preconceived ideas about how we age can impact our biological aging by as much as 7.5 years. Hmm. So it's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning. You're never too old to learn, grow, and contribute and make a difference in the world, even if that's just, just a small, tiny step. So some of my guests for Aging Reimagined include Ashton Applewhite, who has written a book called This Chair Rocks, an Aging Manifesto. I mean, and, it's like, yes, ageism is abundant in the external world, but we get in our own way. Or we send cards. We send cards, birthday cards that are supposed to be funny, and they denigrate aging. Like, why are we doing that? Do we really believe that? No, we need to think about our own mindsets.
Yes, especially since we're all going to go through it. I think it's funny when people talk about older adults and and they talk like they're never going to be there. You know, it's all of us. When we talk about aging and the aging process, we should be including ourselves regardless of our age, because the fact is that every single day we're aging.
Yeah. And it's interesting, even though I'm a gerontologist, I work with a pretty broad range of people. And I'm finding that the message that I share about, you know, lifestyle choices is starting to reach a younger population, kind of mid 50s, because there are things that we can do really at any age to improve the outcome of aging, you know, throughout the decades. And it's like a 401k plan. It's never, you know, the earlier you invest, the better, but it's never too late to start.
Mm-hmm. How does personalized coaching play a role in helping older adults achieve their health goals? And what does the process typically involve?
Yeah. So personalized coaching, when I think about it, I think of it more as kind of a one-on-one. It's interesting you mention this, because some of the people I work with in Healthy Habits Network, we also do some one-on-one coaching. And, you know, again, this idea of personalization has to do with what motivates an individual, what are the barriers, and what do they really want to change. So I think this idea of coaching, it's less about like me sharing wisdom with someone or another coach sharing wisdom with somebody, but it's really tapping into someone's motivation for change and then their self-limiting beliefs. I can give you just a quick example. I work with somebody who I do personal coaching with. She's also part of Healthy Habits Network, but she's in the workforce. She's in her mid-60s. She has a very active, high-profile, high-stress job. She didn't believe exercise during the week was possible, just didn't believe it, but knew the importance of it. And so that's a case where, you know, gradually helping her find something that she could be successful with. And some of it, honestly, Janet, it's when you get out of bed in the morning, put on your gym shoes instead of your slippers. Shoes versus slippers. It's a code, you know, and then we do check-ins. You know, I give her a little prompt. She's found 20 minutes a morning to exercise.
That's great.
And it's great. And it's something, and there's, again, that's that habit, the consistency. But I think that where it starts, if people are interested in, should I invest in a coach? Is there something you really want to change? If you really don't want to change, then don't invest in it, because the desire for positive change has to come from inside you.
Yes, I agree. As a therapist, I realized that early on that if people do not have a personal buy-in in their health and what they want to achieve, it doesn't matter how good of a therapist you are, how much effort you put into it, they will never be successful, and you will never be successful in helping them improve their health.
That's so true.
Yes. Sally, thank you so much for being on my show today. So much enjoyed having you. You're the first guest that I have had that has talked about this topic with healthy aging. We've talked about nutrition, exercise, and I wanted to have you on because all of those are factors that are going to help people age in place. And the reason is, the major reason is because all of those are going to reduce your fall risk. And if you can reduce your fall risk as an older adult, it's much more likely that you are going to be able to stay in the home that you want to live in and continue to live with quality of life.
That I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, Sally.